Yattadagre visamiva pariname mritopamam tatsukam satvikam proktam atmabuddhi prasadajam. Translation: that which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the pursuit of self-realization, one has to follow many rules and regulations to control the mind and senses, and to concentrate the mind on the self. All these procedures are very difficult, bitter, like poison. But if one is successful in following the regulations and comes to the transcendental position, he begins to drink real nectar and he enjoys life. Yat tad agre vishamiva parināme mṛtopamam tat sukam sattvikam proktam atma buddhi prasadajam. That which in the beginning may be just like poison, but at the end is just like nectar, and which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness in the mode of goodness. So in the 18th chapter, we're discussing different qualities, different aspects of our lives in the three modes of material nature. So here we're going to discuss the different kinds of happiness. And this word happiness is something which is relative, and therefore we can understand that someone could be in the mode of ignorance and be happy about it, or someone could be in the mode of passion and be happy. And in fact, we face that all the time. We meet people who say, why should I take up spiritual life? I have money. I have friends. I'm very good looking. I'm enjoying life. I'm happy. So it's hard to convince such persons. And on the other hand, as aspiring transcendentalists, we are advised to perform austerity. Rishabha Dev, who was a great king many, many years ago, very powerful and great king, practically he was emperor of the whole world. So he had many sons, nearly 100 sons, and he advised them as their father and their well-wisher and their guru. In a cultured society, the father and mother are actually the guru of the children. The children respect the parents, and the parents give the children real value in their lives. They teach them how to get free from the cycle of birth and death. In fact, the Shastra tells that one should gurur nasasyat, pita nasasyas, janani nasasyat. One should not become a guru or a father or a teacher One should not take responsibility for anyone unless that person can deliver his charge or his person under him, unless he can deliver them from the cycle of birth and death. So that's a tough instruction. One should not become a parent unless he can deliver his children from the cycle of birth and death. But that's cultured society. So Rishabhdev told his sons, Nayana deho deha bhajan riloke kastan kaman arhate vidbujamye. My dear sons, do not use your valuable human life, the energy that you get, your intelligence, superior intelligence, do not use it for endeavoring to achieve the same kind of happiness that is available to the hogs. Vidbujam means hogs or dogs or animals that eat, in this case, stool. In India, in the villages, the hogs, of course, hogs will eat anything, even in the West, but most specifically, you see in the villages, they are the sanitation department. They clean up all the stool. And they relish it. It's not that they wish they could have, you know, a horse burger or something like that. Or they could have a pizza. Maybe they wish they could have the stool from someone who ate a pizza. I don't know. But they actually enjoy eating stool. They've got a body like that. So, more or less, people are endeavoring for that kind of sense gratification, for that kind of happiness. People want to eat anything and everything at any time of day without any restriction. They want to enjoy intoxication. They want to enjoy gambling and sex. No restriction. Hogs also don't have any restriction in their sexual activities. They engage in sex with their mother, sister, daughter. It doesn't matter. They don't discriminate. So Rishabhdev tells his sons that don't do this. Don't waste your life. If you get the body of a hog in your next life, then you can do that. But in the human form, tapo divyam. He says, tapasya, austerity, is transcendental. Austerity will bring you brahma sokyam twanantam. Unlimited spiritual happiness. So, therefore, use your life for that purpose. So, although here we're advised, yet tad agre vishamiva, in the beginning, it may be a little difficult because we're not accustomed, we're not regulated to perform austerity. Actually, the austerities that we're being asked to do in this age are not so difficult. In fact, they're more healthy than anything else. It is actually healthy. Believe it or not, it is good for you to have a relatively cold shower in the morning. It's not that you have to pour ice cubes on your head or something like that, although sages in the Himalayas do bathe in ice-cold water at Gomukh, where the Ganges comes out of the mountain. It's ice cold. And sages bathe there. But we're not being asked to do that. We're being asked to take a colder shower rather than a warm shower. It's good for our vitality, for our strength, for our nerves. It makes your nerves strong. So it's an austerity, but it's good for you. Vegetarian diet is good for you. It's proven in so many ways scientifically. We can go through the colon of a carnivore is 3 times the length of the body, and the meat goes in and gets out of his body very quickly without putrefying, without getting rotten. Whereas a human being or a vegetarian animal has 12 times the length of the body. So the meat stays in the body 4 times longer. And therefore the meat gets rotten inside and produces carcinogens. And what is the biggest cause of death in the world? Practically it's cancer and heart disease, both caused by meat eating. And the acid which digests the body in carnivores, that acid, the digestive acid in the stomach, is 20 times stronger than the acid in a vegetarian animal or in a human being. We have the same makeup as a vegetarian animal. So there are many reasons why a vegetarian diet is more healthy for us. Although it's an austerity to some people to change, but it's actually for your good. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, raga dvesha vimuktaistu vishayan indriyaischaran atma vasyar videyatma prasadam adigachati. One who is able to control his envy and his desires to be peaceful, to regulate. I think the important word is regulate. We're not asked to kill our desires. We're not asked to cut off our senses. We're not asked to blind our eyes, cut out our tongue, castrate ourselves. This is not what we're asked to do. But by the process of regulating our lives, instead of going uncontrolled, instead of being dragged around like a bull with a ring in its nose. The bull is very strong, but you put a ring in the bull's nose, you can pull him anywhere, this way and that way, because the nose is so sensitive. And we're like that. We think we're so proud of our independence, but we're actually being pulled this way and that way by our senses. We actually don't have control over our lives. We're at the mercy of the people who are marketing so many products. They dictate to us what we should do, how we should dress, what foods we should eat, what songs we should sing, how we should live, what kind of apartment we should live in. We think we're independent, but if you study rationally, we're not at all independent. We're completely controlled, and we're not doing what's good for us. Therefore, if one can control and regulate his life, atma vasyar videyatma, prasadam adigachati, he is eligible for the mercy of the Lord. If he's videyatma, regulative principles that we follow, they're called regulative principles of freedom. We're getting freed from the bodily conception of life. We're getting freed from attachment to a temporal life. The body means as long as you enjoy the body, you have to get old, diseased, and die. If you are able, like the coconut, you don't see so much here, but in India, everywhere in the marketplace, there are coconuts. And everybody uses them for their cooking. So you'll find that the coconut, when it's green, of course, people drink the water and sometimes they eat the meat. There's white coconut meat, and it's stuck to the skin, stuck to the shell of the coconut. And people cut off the top of the coconut and scrape out that meat and eat it. It's quite nice. But as the coconut ripens and ripens, it becomes brown and dark, and then the meat gets detached from the shell of the coconut, and you can shake it. You can feel there's something inside there that's actually totally separate. It's a little sphere of its own. And inside that coconut meat, which has become its own little sphere, there is milk, coconut milk, which is really the nectar. When the coconut has become very mature and ripe, that coconut milk is very, very tasty. And they make so many wonderful preparations like payasam, which is a kind of sweet rice made with coconut milk. In South India, at all the major temples, wherever you go, you get payasam. So a devotee of the Lord is able to live in the world and yet not be touched by the world because he's not attached to it. He's learned how to regulate his life and to withdraw his mind. Yada sangharate chayam kurmon ganiva sarvasya indriyan indriyarte vyastasya pragya pratishtita. He's called pragya pratishta because he's able to withdraw his senses like the tortoise draws his limbs within the shell. The devotee is able to mentally renounce the objects of the senses. Or he's able to use everything in the service of Krishna. He sees everything that it belongs to Krishna. It's his possession. I am temporarily a lessee, or even better, I am a servant of Krishna, and therefore I will use Krishna's possessions in his service. I will not reject anything that can be used to serve him. I will accept everything favorable for rendering devotional service. That is the consciousness. He doesn't change his activities. He changes his consciousness, and by doing so, he becomes detached, and although living in the world, he's not caught. He's not bound up by the modes of nature. He doesn't suffer the way an ordinary materialistic man suffers. So Krishna tells Arjuna again, actually Arjuna, he's the archetype living being in the material world. Although he's Arjuna the warrior, but he's also a good example of what kind of consciousness we are all in, being covered by the modes of material nature. So he feels in his life that he's actually a sincere person, but he feels that somehow I'm forced to act beyond my own discretion, beyond my own will. So he asks Krishna, what is it that one is impelled? Impelled, this is a very strong word. One is literally forced. Hranti prasabham manaha. Krishna says, yatato hi api kaunteya purushasva vipaschita. Even a learned scholar, vipaschita, indriyani pramatini, when he becomes maddened by sense desire, haranti prasabham manaha, he's forced to act. So Krishna, Arjuna asks Krishna, what is it by which I am impelled? So Krishna tells Arjuna that kamesha, krodesha, rajogun samudbhava, mahashano mahapapma vidyenam iha vairinam. It's the opposite of love of God, it's lust. Now this lust is not only in the form of sex. It becomes sublimated as lab, puja, and pratishta also. Lust comes out, the original lust is pungsa striya, mithuni bhavam etat, mithun, maithun, maithun agara, the shackles of sex. So that's the original lust. But lava, one wants some profit. He wants to make money. He wants to amass a fortune. One becomes lusty and greedy for becoming very wealthy. And this is a side effect of lust. And puja, one wants to be praised. Instead of doing puja to Gornitai, people, why do you do puja to me? Ishwaroham, aham bogi, I'm so great. Everyone in his heart is thinking that he's better at least than someone and deserves to be praised by someone. No one is thinking I'm the worst except for a pure devotee. He is thinking that I am the lowest of the low. And that is his sincere, deep humility. But for the most part, even the pauper, the poor man, the pauper, there's a saying, he's proud of his penny. He thinks that he's better off than someone next to him who doesn't have a penny. So this desire for puja, for praise, for worship, for respect, for honor, one of the qualities of a devotee, as stated by Lord Chaitanya, is amanina manadena. He gives respect to others, but doesn't desire or doesn't accept. Not that he doesn't desire, he doesn't accept praise of himself. Kirtaniya sada hari. In that consciousness, he can chant the holy names. So, patista, he wants position, power, influence. So this is all part of kama. And kama's younger sister is krodha, or anger. And this is all born of the mode of passion, Krishna tells Arjuna. And he tells him that just like a fire is covered by smoke, in the same way, a fire, the essence of the fire is the flame. You can do so many things with a flame. But if you light a fire, like you're a Boy Scout or something, you're trying to light a fire and all you get is smoke, you can't do anything. You can't cook your beans. You can't eat the rest of the Cub Scouts. And, you know, the essence is the flame. So just as a fire is covered by smoke, or just as the embryo is covered by the womb, so the pure consciousness of the living entity is covered by different degrees of lust. And then he goes on to explain that the senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. The lust is like a virus in your computer or something. You know, it's a resident virus that's ready to pop out and just capture you. Whenever you come in contact with the objects of the senses, this lust is there, and it's just, you know, it's hellish. If we could just be free from lust even for a moment, and sometimes we get that experience in kirtan or while discussing Krishna Katha with other devotees. Sometimes we feel very sublime, and we can understand that there's no lust in that. Or as we were discussing yesterday, in the world of love, the object of love is to be pleased. Not that one endeavors for sense gratification through his loving relationship, but the object of love. In the world of love, it's the object of love that is important. So sometimes we experience that, and it's so nice, as opposed to when we just become selfish and covetous and exploitative and start scheming and planning how to use others for our own aggrandizement. What happened there? I've still got a few minutes left. Come on. So he says, he tells Arjuna that the senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. And he says that, therefore, in the very beginning, Arjuna, Instead of agre, he uses the word, what is that? Tasmat tvam indriyani adau. Adau means in the beginning. Tasmat tvam indriyani adau. Therefore, in the beginning, control your senses. Niyamya, by rules and regulations. That's the only way, by making a schedule, by making a regulated schedule. Tasmat tvam indriyani adau niyamya bharatarshapa. Papmanam prajahiyanam jnana vijnana nashanam. This jnana vijnana, knowledge and realized knowledge, theoretical knowledge, which we're enjoying very much. We study Prabhupada's books and things that, you know, you always had a feeling about, but you just couldn't put into words. And when you read Prabhupada's books, you think, wow, that was a dynamic purport. It's exactly what I was feeling, but I just couldn't express it. Or you look out at the world and you read the purport and you say, yeah, that's right. It's like that. So that you've got this theoretical knowledge, and by practice of devotional service, while contemplating this theoretical knowledge and at the same time practicing some activities, taking up the process. Bhakti yoga is a process. If you follow the process, it's a science. You get a result. It's tested. Sages and saints since time immemorial have been getting the same results. A double-blind test. You know, it's there. In medicine, they have what they call a double-blind test, where they give someone a real pill with the medicine, and somebody gets a, what do you call it? Placebo, yeah. It's nothing. It's just some sugar or something. And they're able to calculate what is actually the result. So the process of bhakti yoga actually is very, very scientific if you apply the process correctly. So Krishna tells Arjuna that this is the thing. You have to take up regulation, because this will destroy your enemy lust, which covers your intelligence and your realization. Jnana vijnana nashanam, sarva nash. It makes lust just, you can't cultivate the mode of goodness or transcendental goodness in a lusty environment. So here, the same thing, yat tadagre vishamiva, although it's poison in the beginning for some people look at it as poisonous. Personally, for myself, because I was raised in a family, and I've seen it in India. Here, I'll take my own example. I was raised in a very strict family. So from the very beginning, rules and regulations were part of our household. My father was a military man, so I was accustomed. And even rising early, being a cadet and all that, rising early at 5:30 or something in the morning, ungodly hour. But it wasn't hard for me to take up devotional life or the rules and regulations. Anyway, they made sense. In India, where so many families practice some type of devotional service, children are naturally, they have no trouble being vegetarian. They have no trouble being socially proper, socially putting social etiquette above lust. They don't have a problem with it because they're raised in that way. So it may be poison for some, but the result, parinami, mritopamam. Parinam. This is a parinam is an interesting word. Parinam means children also, actually.
the byproduct.
Parinam means the byproduct or the end product. Here, parinama is at the end. In other words, in the beginning, agre is visha, poison. But pariname, in the end, after practicing properly, mritopamam, it is nectarian. So parinama can mean end, and it also means transformation. This word parinama was used by Shankaracharya, a very famous critique. Shankaracharya actually criticized Vedavyas, who compiled all the Vedas. In fact, he insulted Vedavyas, saying that Vedavyas did not understand philosophy. And because the Lord, the Supreme Lord, is avikara, or changeless. He has no vikara, he's avikara. He's changeless. He cannot change. He's eternal, and he doesn't change. So Shankaracharya wanted to establish his impersonal philosophy. So therefore, he stated that what is in the material world, the cosmic manifestation, is asat, it's false. Brahma satyam jagan mithya. It's mithya, or false. Only Brahman is truth. There's all one pervading Brahman. Now, the proper understanding is that the material cosmos is a transformation, but of the energies of the Lord. The Lord remains the same. He remains unchanged. And Jiva Goswami, in his various literatures, especially Paramatma Sandarbha, but in his other Sandarbhas also, he easily refutes Shankaracharya. And he quotes from different scriptures, specifically one more common verse is from the Svetasvatara Upanishad, where it is explained, Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate svabhaviki jnana bala kriya cha. Natatsamas cha vyadikascha drishyate. The Supreme Lord, Natasya karyam karanam cha vidyate, he has nothing to do. Why does he have nothing to do? Well, natatsamas cha vyadikas. He is sama, there's no one, natatsama. There's no one equal to the Supreme, no one equal to him, and abhyadika, there's no one greater than him. So who's going to engage him in work? He has no work to be done. Generally, one is engaged by someone who is superior. He gives you work. He is your boss. So, first of all, the Svetasvatara Upanishad explains that God has nothing to do because he is supreme. Parasya shaktir vividaiva sruyache svabhaviki jnana bala kriyacha. However, he does everything. Although he has no work to do, completely irresponsible, but he does everything. Not a blade of grass can move without his sanction. Every atom is controlled by him. How does he do it? Parasya shaktir. Through his multifarious energies. And therefore this parinama, or transformation, is the transformation of the energies of the Lord. And we know from the Isha Upanishad, Purnasya Purnam Adaya, although so many units emanate from him, he remains unchanged. He remains the complete balance. 1 minus 1 equals 1. Although so many things are coming from him, he remains perfect and complete, the whole. So although the cosmic manifestation is generated by Krishna's multifarious energies, they remain within Krishna. They're not outside of Krishna. They're still within Krishna, and Krishna is unchanged. So therefore, Shankaracharya's conclusion is completely wrong. So Krishna is also known as Amrita, which means immortal. And here, Amrita Upamam. In the end, one gets happiness which is compared to nectar. In other words, real happiness is Amrita, or eternal happiness. Happiness cannot be happiness which depends on something else. That is not actual happiness. That is not substantial happiness. That is not something worth dedicating your life to. Just like Rishabhdev said, don't dedicate your life to this temporary sense gratification happiness. Go for Brahmasokyam Tvanantam, because it is everlasting. It is ever increasing. We discussed Anandam Buddhivardhanam, happiness which grows and grows and ever increases. Not for a little while, but perpetually, eternally. We cannot imagine the bliss of Krishna consciousness, because Krishna's ever expanding. Krishna's glories are ever expanding. And the potential to love Krishna and glorify Krishna and be engrossed, be immersed in nectar, that also increases. One's nectar grows. It's not compared to a condition where there's no nectar, but it's simply ever increasing. So this Amrita is something that everyone aspires for, but people just don't know where to find it. They don't know where to look for nectar. They don't know what is nectar. And I'm not surprised that they don't know, because they don't study. They don't look. They're too caught up. They're captured by the objects of the senses. Again, they think that they're free. Well, if I wanted to come to the temple and study your books, I could do it. But I've chosen not to come. Well, you haven't really chosen not to come. Your karma won't allow you to come. You're simply captured, bound up by the modes of nature. So no wonder people don't know what to do. Pravrittim cha navrittim cha. They don't know. And therefore their suffering is based upon ignorance. There's no need of suffering in the material world. It's only a condition in the mind. There is no suffering for the soul. The soul is sat chit ananda. And if you live in the soul, if you live in the spirit, if you live in Krishna consciousness, you, again, the same example of the coconut, or in the world but not of the world, as our friend Jesus Christ said. Same concept. He had the same idea. It's not a different thing. He had the same idea. He was a renunciate. He renounced sense gratification. But he lived in the world with his friends, with his followers, etc. But he was not attached to the material world. And we also have to somehow or other become like that. That's what we're endeavoring for. To execute dharmartha, kama, and moksha in a regulated way, so that at the final ante narayana smritihi, at the end we can remember God. That's what we're endeavoring for. And that kind of amrita is very rare to achieve. There are different examples. I know there's one famous story of the famous pot of nectar that the demigods were aspiring to get. You know that story. The demons and the demigods were fighting. Yeah. Actually, Bali Maharaj was the king of the demons. He was the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, and he was very powerful, Bali Maharaj, as king of the demons. So he had an expert army. He was an expert strategist, and he had been to Washington to get the latest weapons, and he had defeated all of the biggest demigods, and he was taking over the heavenly planets. So discretion is the better part of valor. The demigods approached Lord Brahma, who approached Vishnu and prayed to Vishnu for help. So Vishnu came, and he advised them that you had better make a truce. Again, the Bhagavatam is full of all kinds of teaching, and in diplomacy, when a king, he should know when to fight with the enemy and when to make a truce with the enemy. Obviously, if you don't have a very good chance of winning, it's a very good time to make peace. If you think you can win, in other words, every day we're expecting Mr. Milosevic to make peace, because I don't think he can, his whole economy is going to be destroyed. Anyway, it's another thing. So the demigods agreed that they would make peace, and Vishnu gave them a special plan. So the demigods went to Bali Maharaj and said, look, we have just got a scheme by which we can churn the ocean of milk. There was a special ocean on another planet in a wonderful atmosphere. There was an ocean of milk. We have a salty ocean, but there are other planets that have other kinds of oceans. So this ocean of milk, the demigods informed the demons that if we churn it in this way, that we'll get from it Amrit, nectar, by which we'll all, drinking it, will become eternal. So that enlivened the demons very much. They thought it was a very good scheme. They agreed to the truth. In their minds they were thinking, we will steal it from the demigods because they're weak. Although they agreed to the truth, they agreed to the truce, but they were actually contemplating breaking the truce. So anyway, they approached the ocean of milk, and the idea was that they were going to take this mountain, a very large mountain called the Mundara Mountain, and they were going to churn the ocean with this huge mountain. And they were going to engage Vasuki, who was the king of the snakes. He was a giant, huge snake, long snake, fat snake. And they were going to wrap him around the mountain and churn, you know. Just like you make lassi, you know, churning lassi, if you've seen them in India. Or Indian women, they churn butter. So here they were going to churn this ocean of milk. So they started to bring the Mundara Mountain towards the ocean of milk, but the Mundara Mountain was so heavy that they couldn't actually lift it. They lifted it, but they became very tired because the Mundara Mountain was made of gold, and gold is much heavier than stone. And therefore, they thought they could lift it, but they couldn't. So then Vishnu came and helped them out. He picked it up and he put it on the back of Garuda. So Garuda, of course, is the bird carrier of Lord Vishnu, and he has unlimited strength. So he brought the mountain, but he threw it in the ocean because he was asked to leave. Because if they brought Vasuki... he would become Garuda's dinner, because Garuda loves to eat snakes. So they asked Garuda to leave, and Garuda, he dropped the mountain in the ocean. So there was this mountain at the bottom of the ocean. So then Vishnu again appeared and lifted the mountain out of the ocean, and Vasuki, and they started to churn. and it was very difficult, so Krishna assumed the form of Kurma, Kurma Sharira. And he acted as the pivot. They put the mountain on the back of the tortoise. And then it turned on the tortoise. It was the peak of the mountain was into Kurma's back. And so he has a spot there. Kurma has a spot in his shell. And then the demons and the demigods began to churn. And so many things came from that ocean. First of all, a Surabhi cow came. So the Brahmins, they took that Surabhi cow because they would use that cow for producing wonderful butter by which they could make ghee and do their sacrifices. And then various other things. Uchaisrava came, the horse, and Bali Maharaj, I believe, took that. And even Lakshmi Devi came out of the ocean of nectar, the ocean of milk, rather. And she looked around. She was looking for a husband. But nobody appealed to her amongst all the demigods and demons. Finally, she chose Lord Vishnu, Lakshmi Narayan. And then at the end, Dhanvantari came, and he was carrying the pot, the kumbha. They call it kumbha. And just like you have in India, that festival, Kumbha Mela, which is it's the largest spiritual festival in the world. The last Kumbha Mela I attended in 1989, there was something like 20 million people there throughout the whole thing. And on Amavasya Day, most of them were there on the 19th of January, which was the most auspicious day for bathing. There was close to 15 million people. I mean, all in one place. And you can imagine, if you've ever been in line, in a ticket line in India, what chaos is like. or in a bus queue or whatever. Everybody just goes for the door. There's no question of a line. But at Kumbh Mela, the Indian Army had organized it so well that it was quite well done. This was at Allahabad. They have problems at Hardwar, but anyway, Dhanvantari appeared with this kumbha full of nectar. So the demons immediately stole it. No truce or no sharing or anything. The demons just immediately stole it. And the demigods became very angry, but Vishnu told them, relax, I'll take care of everything. And what happened was the demons stole it, but they weren't going to share it with each other. Each one of them was trying to get above the other. That's the nature of demons. They constantly fight with one another because they're so uptight. They're so much in anxiety to get my share, to get mine. They have no peace of mind that by God's grace I will get my share. They have no confidence or anything like that. It's just grabbing. Like, for example, if you put a sack of, some nuts or whatever in the street, and there's squirrels in a park, if you put them in a park, squirrels will come and take as much as they can put in their mouth and they'll go away and they'll leave the rest. But if you put some grains or something in the street, a human being will come and he'll look this way and that way and take the whole bag, even if he needs it or not. It's demoniac mentality. Rather than having faith in the Lord, that the Lord will give you what you need. Krishna says, yoga kshema vahami aham. I will carry what you lack and I will protect what you have, but the demons have no confidence in this. Therefore, they're constantly fighting with one another, and this is what happened. The demons began to fight with one another over the nectar. Then Krishna appeared as Mohini Murti. And, of course, she was so attractive. When God appears as a woman, then that woman is heavenly, beautiful. Not only is she beautiful in every way, but she has a special attraction. She's Krishna. Krishna means the attractor of all living beings. Just like the cows and cowherd boys, when the parents came in the Brahma Vimohan Leela, when the parents came down the mountainside to welcome their sons and the cows back, they couldn't understand why they were so attracted all of a sudden to their children and to the cows. They knew they kind of loved their children, but this was unnatural attraction. Because what had happened was, when Brahma stole the cows and cowherd boys, Krishna appeared again as the cows and cowherd boys. So it was actually Krishna that they were attracted to. And here the same thing, the exact same thing. Mohini was a woman, but it was Krishna, and the demigods and the demons were both attracted. So the demons, they agreed that Mohini would become the arbitrator to decide who would actually get the nectar. So this was Krishna's trick. He's very tricky. Krishna, although he's equal to everyone, but he's very much inclined towards his devotees, and the demigods are his devotees. So he was there to help them out. So he sat everybody down in rows, the demons on one side and the devotees on the demigods on the other side, and he was going to supposedly distribute the nectar to everybody. But he knew that the demons were unfit to receive the nectar, and therefore he began to distribute it to the demigods. And he practically distributed it all to the demigods. And the demons saw this, but they had already agreed with Mohini that whatever she decided, they would accept. So they had to keep their mouths quiet, they had to keep shut. They got tricked. But one of the demons, his name was Rahu, so he sat down between the sun and the moon and put on the dress of a demigod, and he was going to get that amrit somehow or other. And in fact, he got some amrit in his mouth, but then Mohini realized, Krishna realized, and threw his Sudarshan Chakra and cut off his head. But the nectar had already entered the body a little bit. So although the head was cut off, but Rahu remained alive, he wasn't killed. And very soon we're going to have a solar eclipse. Rahu's going to come and do his work. He's going to swallow the sun in August. If you don't believe in Rahu, you can go and see him in August. But anyway, this Amrita, everyone is after this Amrita. The demons were after the Amrita. The only way you can get the Amrita is by surrendering to Krishna. You can't get the Amrita by tricks. Another place where there's Amrita in the earth is Bindu Sarovara. There's a very nice lake in Bhubaneswar. What happened was Kardama Muni was performing austerities, and he satisfied the Lord. So the Lord was very pleased, and he came to see him. And Krishna was so pleased by his devotee that he began to cry. So his tears formed this Bindu Sarovara lake, and that water is known as Shivamrita Jal. And it's said that it can cure any disease at all, and even to this day, and even in Kali Yuga, people go there and drink that water. Mayapur and I went there and drank the water. And actually, even Prabhupada had Gaur Govinda Maharaj bring him when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan and very ill. He had Gaur Govinda bring him some huge pots full on the train. He came on the train with these big brass pots of Shivamrita Jal from Bindu Sarovara. So, Tatsukam Sattvikam Proktam Atma Buddhi Prasadajam. What we're trying to do is cultivate a standard of happiness which is in the mode of goodness. That's all. It takes cultivation. It's not foreign to us. It just takes a little effort. And it leads you towards self-realization where other kinds of happiness won't. And therefore, it helps you, Prabhupada says here, to concentrate the mind on the self. That's what we're trying to do. To concentrate our mind on Krishna, the Supreme Self, and to concentrate on ourself as a servant of Krishna, and at the end, to be with Krishna in the spiritual world. That's our parinami mritopamam. Even in this life, a simple life spiritualized by high thinking is far more gratifying. It actually will be more peaceful and satisfying than any other kind of life. We just have to achieve it. We're not used to it yet. It takes years because we've been in the material world for millions of years. You know, we've been conditioned. So we have to keep trying, keep endeavoring, be patient, get by with help from our friends, and keep going. And the result will be there. The scriptures are true. And the testimony is there of so many great saintly persons. Srila Prabhupada, we know, was a self-realized soul, and he wouldn't lie to us. So we just have to keep going. So I can't keep going any longer. So I'm going to end there. Are there any questions or comments? Yes. Yes, there's a story about Ekadasi, and we can talk about that after class. So basically, the personification of sin was allowed to live within food grains on Ekadasi, and so one who takes food grains is partaking of that sin. O Guru Nasasyat Janani Sasat Nasasyat Pita Nasasyat. Yeah. Dependence. No, one should be able to present Krishna consciousness. Nobody can be forced. But one should be able to present Krishna consciousness. And it's not that difficult. Prabhupada once told his servants, Shruti Kirti, Shamsundar, Pradyumna. Actually, Shamsundar and Pradyumna were sleeping. It was early in the morning. And it wasn't so early. It was later. Anyway, Prabhupada was upset that they were still sleeping. They were his traveling entourage, and, you know, they were his representatives. And so he called Shrutakirti was there, and he said, go call them, Shamsundar and Pradyumna. And they came, and he said, why were you sleeping, and this and that. And he said, actually, if you just follow these simple rules and regulations, if you just chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds, rise early in the morning for Mangal Arati and attend the morning programs. And if you just do this for 12 years, you will, everything you say will be perfect. So, any of you on 11 years or 10 years? It's not that difficult. We think it's something mystical where all of a sudden you can fly on magic carpets and... It's just a practical way of life. It's not something that isn't done by people who live in the villages, on farms. They rise early, and many of them have a simple diet. And anyway. Yes? Chant your rounds very loudly. That was Prabhupada's advice. Actually, Prabhupada was so kind that he exhibited very human symptoms. It was always Krishna conscious, But Prabhupada got angry sometimes with his disciples and various other things. So Prabhupada told his servant that when this happens to you, chant your rounds very loudly. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. If there's some attack. It happens. So I know in the next few days I'll see devotees chanting. Jumping up and down. Don't care what people think. Your job is to get out of the material world, and you have a chance now. It's not a time to worry what other people think about you. You already look strange. And, you know. Okay. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.